Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza box pints.
My wife's cakes are selling up hot cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Delicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, the food and drink programme for Cambridge and the surrounding area. I am Matt Bentman and here's Alan Alder and Sue Bailey with today's lineup.
Well, Sue and I have each visited a bakery this week. I went to Stir in Cambridge to find how it is their head baker Shandor Bagameri wins so many national awards for his bread.
And I met with Jennifer Marshall of Sado Hub, which supplies several cafes in Cambridge with goods like focaccia and donuts, and heard her extraordinary story of how she moved from being a concert pianist to being a highly regarded baker.
I also popped into a local cafe and had a really unusual latte. I enjoyed it hugely. I asked the owner about it. It's a sort of thing you can do if you contribute to a radio programme.
And I went to a Cambridge market to find out what it's like to be a storeholder as a new manager takes the reins at one of the regular stalls.
We've some ideas for recipes involving onions from Rosie Sykes, whose new book is just published. We also have our regular features, a roundup of local food and drink news, free food in and around Cambridge, and, at the end, a rundown of local jobs in food and drink.
First, I spoke to Jennifer Marshall about how she changed her life from being an international concert pianist living in Malta to setting up the highly regarded Sado Hub, based in Newmarket. It's a remarkable story.
I used to live in London for almost 20 years. I used to study at the Royal Academy of Music, and then I was a concert pianist for many years, toured the world, met with my husband, who's a conductor, pianist and organist. Then we decided to make the move to Malta. That was back in 2007. We traveled a lot during our time based in Malta as well because of our concerts. However, we always said, given that we are both musicians, we always said that if we ever had children and if they show any musical talent, we would then have to make the very difficult move. I'm saying difficult only because we had been settled by this point in Malta. We have our own. We would have to make this decision to move to the UK. So anyway, so we moved in September 2022. I had to make a decision to cut back on my concerts. I was always a foodie anyway. I was always interested in bread. I was always very interested in grains more than anything. So I started studying on my own, self-taught kind of, looking at grains, understanding how grains, their longevity, you know, where they come from and so on. And that really sort of took me on another journey. By this point, my concerts had kind of, you know, winded down a bit because my husband was traveled so much. So one of us had to take a step back. It's impossible to have two parents who are constantly traveling. That's where my love of making bread started. It took me a very long time to understand the concept of making nice bread. I had a lot of disasters along the way, many, many, many disasters, but I persisted. And the reason why I persisted was I didn't like the fact that I was preparing a sandwich that is full of chemicals. Irritated me. And that is why I started researching how to make proper bread, real bread. And then I delved into the world of gluten-free. I started making sourdough gluten-free bread because there is absolutely not one person in Malta who does gluten-free bread. So I started researching. I can't exactly call it gluten-free because I had wheat in my kitchen, but I started teaching people online how to make gluten-free sourdough bread. And that was using a huge variety of gluten-free flours, and that I really enjoyed it. But still, you know, we were not intolerant to gluten, so I also loved making gluten wheat bread. The next step for me was actually going into making sourdough bread, which actually, after making gluten-free sourdough bread, becomes very easy to make. And then I started making sourdough bread, and there was not one person on the island making this bread. People know about it, of course, but because you don't have it, you don't ask for it. But when people, word got around and it started becoming, I started becoming really, really popular on the island for making bread. It was really funny. So anyway, I set up my micro bakery. And then from that, other things started happening, scones and sausage rolls and other things. So I started making basically pastry with sourdough. So by using the leftover sourdough, you make your pastry, you make whatever, everything.
That's a very clever idea.
So then we move. Unfortunately, it was a very hard decision to take because we have two children, Martina and James, and James is now a chorister at St. John's College Choir. And Martina is at King's. She's a chorister at Pembroke College as well, as they both play a number of instruments. So in terms of education for them, we made the right move. For me, the hardest part was to close my business in Malta. So when I came to the UK, it took a long time for me to set it. It was very difficult and lonely time, very depressing. The weather didn't help. It's very difficult to set up a new life, especially as an adult, and especially when you've had such a full-on life and you left it. However, I'm the kind of person who is always very focused, and I don't give up. I really don't give up despite the difficulties. It's been a very, very hard time. If I might add, despite the fact that my children are British and my husband is British, we've been married over 15 years. Unfortunately, due to Brexit, it's been very difficult also to prove to the Home Office for me to stay. But I'm trying not to think about it, because as my husband keeps on saying, there's a way to stay. You know, we're family, we're not going to. So as soon as I got my permit from Home Office that I'm able to stay, that was 15th of March, on the 15th of March, I basically have, I think, what I call refugee syndrome. Because when you find it so difficult to stay in the country, despite the fact that you feel that you're worthy to stay, then you try even harder to make a success out of what you do. And I've become extremely focused, much more than I was in Malta, somehow.
And I mean, and this focus has led you to literally just having your new premises.
Yes.
The beginning of this week.
Yes. So on the 15th of March, this is 15th of March 2023, I set up the company, I set up, you know, the various forms and so on. And I moved into a small kitchen in a polo club. I was there for about 5-6 months. And then I moved to my house. I registered the business in my house. In the meantime, I just basically cold called people, because what else do you do? You know nobody. I had no friends right here. So what I did is told myself, how did I start in Malta? How did I do it? You know, and the only way I could think of is start from my street. So we happen to live at the moment in Newmarket, and I was thinking of the next coffee shop that is the next in the next street down from the house. So I cold called Victoria from Newmarket. Cold called her. She gave me the first window of hope. She said, let's meet. She said, what do you do? I said, well, I can do breads, I can do donuts, I can do, you know, I sort of started listening. And she said, She said, I already have a supplier who does breads, and I feel that I like loyalty. So good for her. I think that's very important. She said, but I have nobody doing donuts. She said, would you bring me some to try? So I did. We did that. And the following week, she ordered 20, and they were sold out within an hour.
Excellent.
That's how my relationship started with her, and it's been going on since March 2023. And in fact, she just opened her second coffee shop in Sawston, and she's ordering now not twice, but almost three times the normal amount, you know. So it's about building relationships, and the only way to do it for me is to prove my point, to prove what I can do, to give the best, to be trustworthy, and to use top ingredients as well as I can. I try not to buy any ingredients. I try to make everything myself. All my fillings I make, I try to use organic flours if possible, and so on. But to give the best that I can, because I want people to trust me, you know, and that's the only way I can build bridges for me, because I don't have a history here. In Malta, I built that history, and that's why perhaps people still contact me. Whereas here, I have to start cold.
But again, you're building a history here, because I gather you're supplying people again in Cambridge. Which places are you supplying at the moment?
So at the moment, we're doing filled focaccias, caprese focaccias, for the new coffee shop called London Great Coffee. So they just opened one in Regent Street in Cambridge. So we're doing, I do the focaccias, and I fill them with mozzarella, pesto, tomatoes, and we're doing sort of now double the caprese. The caprese seem to be doing really well. I work with the coffee shop on West Road called Harvey's at Gonville and Keys, and that is so popular. It's incredible. So they order donuts every day from me. And Meadows, Cambridge, she orders sourdough breads every week. So apparently those are really popular. And then I supply other places, like at Tattersalls when there's auctions. They're very popular, these auctions, horse auctions. Mm. I'm learning a lot by living in Newmarket as well.
And you seem to be able to do a very wide variety of different things. I mean, what would you say is your favourite to make? And then what is the range of some of the other things that you can do?
I love making bread, of course, and I love making different types of bread. For example, I love making charcoal bread. I love making seasoned bread. So, if, for example, beetroot is in season, then I would add beetroot, feta cheese and pepper. Black pepper, correct, black pepper. If garlic is in season, then I would, for example, do a garlic pesto and add that to the bread. I love making these kind of interesting breads, as long as they become part of the rest of dinner, so they don't take over But I love making other bakes. I love making babkas, for example. So, for example, yesterday I did date, orange zest and almond babkas. And the smell, once they bake, I then do sort of a syrup with orange, rose water and so on. It's beautiful. So it has that Arabic, because this is where my background is, right? Malta is a mixture of cultures. So for me, it is also about representing where I'm coming from. So I love making this kind of style babkas, where you have an explosion of taste. A babka's coming, it's Polish, Ukrainian. You have the dough and you open the dough and you put a paste, whatever you want. You can put chocolate, you can put so many things, almonds, you can put orange paste. Then you normally splice it, cut it, don't even know how to say it, and make it into a braid. And then you put it either in a tin loaf or you make a small babka's, and they look beautiful. They look absolutely gorgeous. Sort of something like a cinnamon roll, but
more exotic and more interesting.
You can make it, but so the cinnamon roll can be also sort of, you can also play around with the flavors, I think. And I love also in Malta what was used to be really popular. I used to make meat pies, a lot of meat pies. They used to be really popular only because I believe that using good quality meat, you know, you either are going to give your client the best you can or don't do it. So I do my own pastry, I buy the best butter if I can, you know, and all these things. So you give a really good quality meat pie, you know, full of meat and so on. And then, of course, I love making other sweet cakes, brownies. If I'm using chocolate, I want to use the best quality chocolate. I will not forego on the quality of the chocolate, because you can't get a good brownie unless the chocolate is amazingly good.
Yes, we met, in fact, at the Cambridge Chocolate Fest. Exactly. So, yes, indeed, I can see that you were very much supporting good chocolate and from sustainable environment. Basically. And so, commercially, what would you say are your best sellers then?
Definitely donuts. People love the donuts. However, I've been doing quite a bit of markets, and actually I learned quite a lot from people about markets, what they like. It's also for me to do with what captures their interest, right? What looks beautiful on the table. The babkas are huge, very, very well liked, and cinnamon rolls. So people here love cinnamon rolls and they love the babkas and they're willing to try. And also when I make stuff with almond and ricotta and lemon, for example, almond, ricotta and lemon, things that are perhaps a little bit different, that you're not necessarily going to find it in every other shop, let's say. You know, just giving sort of something. So I noticed, for example, that people love brownies. And I always tell anyone who's buying a brownie, I always say the chocolate is amazing. It's 95% chocolate, you know, so, and it's made with sourdough as well. So I use the leftover sourdough to create a brownie. I don't just make a chocolate and sugar brownie.
What are the markets that you go to?
So the three main markets I go to at the moment is Nordstow. I do the last Sunday of every month. And that's a big one because they have a lot of sellers and it's a well-known market. Then I do Burwell Farmers Market, which I really enjoy, second Saturday of every month. It's a sweet little market and they have their followers. They have people who go there regularly. And then the other one I really love is Chievely Farmers Market. I love Chievely Farmers Market because it's in a lovely, gorgeous little village. And it only happens four times a year. And it's so popular. And it's in the, I think it's in the church hall. But it's such a well-organized market. So these three markets. And then, of course, this is where I met my friend Caroline. And she organized the most amazing market, the pop-up autumn market. It was amazing.
The one in Grantchester. Yes, indeed.
It was
yes.
So nice. And I keep on telling her, please do it again. Please do it again. It was so lovely. We really, really enjoyed it. The turnout was incredible. I sold out it, even though I thought I'm not going to sell out. I have too many products. And I sold out. It was an incredible market. She loved it.
What a lovely story. And it sounds like you are just on better and better for better and better things and on a very much upward trajectory. So I think, be following you up in another interview in a year or so's time and see where you've got to by then. Because in terms of speedy development, you're a brilliant example. So thank you so much. Thank you.
And if you'd like to try some of Jennifer's baked goods, you can try them at Victor Victoria Coffee in Sawston and Newmarket. Her focaccia is at London Grade Coffee in Regent Street. Her donuts are at Harvey's off West Road. And her sourdough is delivered once a week to Meadows in Mill Road and in Eltersley Avenue. The name of her bakery is Sourdough Hub.
And now details of free food available in and around Cambridge. And this information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app. And that exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Natasha in Merton Street off Barton Road has three types of sourdough starter available: rye, spelt and white flour. So she says if you bring along a Ziploc bag or a jar, she can give you some along with instructions for feeding and using it. Whilst Elva, near Kettle's Yard, has some Waitrose Bakery French loaves and rolls, along with packs of fresh British leeks and three whole lettuces for anybody who wants them. And, well, that's it, more or less. It's another quiet day on the Olio front, but as ever, do check the app during the weekdays when there's much more activity.
Is that right? OK. Yeah. And, of course, don't forget the other free app, which is called Too Good To Go, and that has unsold food from restaurants and shops, and often at less than half price. But rather than specifying what each leftover item is, the surplus food is simply packaged as a magic bag, and it's ready for you to take home. And, again, that's instead of it being binned at the end of the day's trading.
OK, let's move on to our first news break now, and we begin at the Tickle Arms in Whittlesford, where there's a special menu on the 29th of February showcasing game. Details, full details, are on their website.
On the 2nd of March at Flourish near Hildesham, there's an informal workshop on growing seedlings. You'll find out all about it, have a go, take home aspiring seedlings, as well as some special seeds from the Flourish Seed Room, and you can book at flourishfarmshop.com.
Also on the 2nd of March at the Food Museum in Stowmarket, there's a talk from Louise Gray, author of Avocado Anxiety, the Times Environment Book of the Year, and she has also written The Ethical Carnival. Books can be made on the Food Museum website now.
It's the Cambridge Half Marathon on the 3rd of March, and the Maypole will be open all day, so you can book a table now.
Just back to books for a minute. Rosie Sykes' new book, Every Last Bite, was published on Thursday, so it's in bookshops now. And the recipes are designed to save you time, money and to avoid food waste. And there are also lots of little tips in it, which come from Rosie's many years as a chef. If you missed her talking about the book on our last programme, you can catch it on podcast now.
On the 6th of March, there's a cheese tasting evening at Meadows in Mill Road, on the corner with Ross Street. There'll be five cheeses, all made by women, and there'll be a discussion of the history of women in cheese.
And a couple of tempting foods that have caught our eye, but which have not had the chance to try yet. Chocolate Financier are new at the Cambridge Oven in Hills Road, and Burnt Basque Cheesecake is at the Market Square Coffee and Cake, who are at the Market Square every Friday and Saturday.
Also very interesting, but as yet untried by your flavour team, is a vegetable called an ochre, or an ochre, OCA, which is one of the more unusual vegetables grown at Co Farm in Cambridge. And Culinaris sells produce from Co Farm, so I may pop in on my way home and see what they're like. Apparently, it's a potato-like vegetable, which can be eaten raw, when it has a lemony zing, or cooked, which gives it a more nutty flavour.
Finally, in this must-try section, durian ices are appearing on the menu at Jack's Gelato. The notoriously smelly fruit has a less pungent Thai version, which Jack is using rather than the Malaysian. And that brings us to the end of our first news roundup. We'll have more later.
Have either of you tried any of those foods, by the way?
I've tried durian and it's...
Have you really?
It smells disgusting, but it tastes like toffee ice cream. It's amazing.
How extraordinary.
Oh, yeah, it's lovely.
But it doesn't smell like toffee ice
cream. Oh, no. Bad cheesy feet.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yes.
I wonder how it can be that it tastes so different from what it smells.
It tastes gorgeous. It tastes gorgeous. It really
right.
does.
Oh, right. So we'll have to go to Jack's Gelato then. There was a place, Matt, a while ago, which I remember I think you featured. Was it a Chinese place in Regent Street that had durian ice cream?
Possibly. Oh, are you referring to High Sweetie in Regent
yes,
Street?
Yes, I am referring to High Sweetie.
That was 2017. Yeah.
Was it really? Right.
Ooh, okay. Well, time flies.
Durian ice is back. But one thing I have tried this week, after seeing a picture of it on Instagram, is a beetroot and ginger latte. And that was at Page's in Trumpington. And Page's is a lovely, quite new cafe. And it's pretty small and it's very nicely decorated inside. And it has a surprisingly big terrace outside. And that is where I spoke with the owner, Jasmine Jayusi.
Jasmine, you own Page's in Trumpington Street, and I've just had a latte in there which was made from beetroot and ginger, and it looked fantastic.
Oh, good. I'm glad. It's very, like, vibrant pink colour, isn't it?
Yeah. What's the reaction to it been?
So when you see beetroot and ginger on the menu, not everyone is taken by it because I think they think it might have a bit of a vegetable-y taste, which isn't the case. I mean, you just tried it, but once you add the other things, the coconut sugar, the milk, you know, your milk of choice, oat or coconut or regular, then it has a really great taste to it. And most people, once they have it, do order it again. So once you get over the fact that, you know, it's not your usual order, then, you know, it's become really popular. So
yeah, I'm not surprised. I thought it was fantastic. And it looks good. And the latte art on the top of it was really very professionally done.
Yeah, so my baristas are really, really great. We opened in October, but as time's gone on, everyone's got incredibly good. I don't know what latte art you had, but Sam, our head barista, he usually does a really beautiful swan.
It was a swan. Looking at it and I was thinking,
good.
That's a swan and that's very fitting.
Yeah, it's very good. And yeah, so we kind of do themed ones as well. Like on Halloween, we did the pumpkin spice lattes and then we did pumpkin art and things like that. So, yeah, it's
great attention to detail. And you've got another couple of unusual lattes as well.
So we have the matcha lattes and then we've got the turmeric lattes. It's kind of turmeric and cinnamon. It's quite heavy on the cinnamon. So, yeah, they've been really, really popular.
Yeah.
I think that also the colours of them are really beautiful, really vibrant colours, the green and the matcha, the yellow of the turmeric. We've just launched the chili hot chocolate as well.
That's a nice combination as well. Right, I'll have to come back for
that.
I wondered what, when I had the beetroot and ginger, I was wondering what to eat with it.
Mm.
I was wondering whether I should have something savoury or something sweet, and in fact I had carrot cake. They're both root vegetables.
Yeah, exactly. It does work really well. That is probably the one I would recommend. Some other people have the banana loaf with it as well. But yeah, I think the assumption is that you'd go for a savoury, but the drink's actually quite sweet.
I thought it probably would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And I hope they do well. Have you got any other unusual ones coming on?
So obviously in the summer we'll start doing all the iced options. And I think, you know, continue each month to bring new things out.
Yeah.
We've got our new pour overs, which we continue to change the beans on. So yeah, lots of new things coming.
Great. So people just need to keep their eye on Instagram.
Yes, that's where everything will be posted. Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks very much, Jasmine.
Thank you so much.
Sounds fantastic. And what was the beetroot and ginger latte like?
Yeah, and what was the cake like?
That's a very Matt question. Well, the latte really was very good. It looks a beautiful colour and it has a lovely warming ginger flavour to it. It was the perfect antidote to the cold, rainy weather outside. And of course, being a latte, it has the feel of a coffee. It's rich and creamy, but this has no coffee in it and therefore no caffeine. So it's a drink you can have late in the day without your sleep being affected. I'd definitely have it again. And the cake was delicious. It really was
very, very fresh with little shreds of carrot in it. Altogether an excellent experience. Pages has the full range of coffees too, as well as a wide range of cakes, and it's worth going to.
Okay, well, Cambridge is a remarkable place for food and drink, and one of the best features is the number of small independent bakeries. Now, one of them, Stir, makes superb bread, so much so that it wins a remarkable number of awards. And head baker Shandor Bagamari told Alan about the awards and why the bakery does so well.
First, I'd like to mention the latest award, which is we've been awarded the 10 best artisan bakery in the whole UK by the Artisan Collective's Baker Dozen. It's truly amazing, especially knowing that more than 100 bakery specialists, including artisan bakers, suppliers, consultants, have voted their favorite bakeries. And the judges say that Stir has been recognized by putting quality, wholesome and healthy products at the heart of every customer. One of our gluten-free bread have been awarded at the Britain's Best Loaf competition, so it was a category winner as well.
How important is technique and how important is the ingredients you use?
The ingredients are very important. I would say the process is more important than the quality of the ingredients.
Right, okay. So what's special about the process that you use, do you think?
We use more traditional long fermentation process to make our products. So it develops more flavor compared to the supermarket so-called fast bread.
Yes, the Chorley Wood process.
They contain many additives, sometimes over 10 to 15 different ingredients. Mm-hmm. However, our sourdough just made with flour, water and salt. Our sourdough made over 3 days, so it's a 3 days process. And we don't use any additives or processing aids in our product. Everybody has different process, and it's just practice and practice and practice.
Yeah.
Probably that's what makes us apart from the competitors.
Yeah. What got you started in baking? How did you begin?
My grandparents had a wood-fired oven, and I stayed over the weekend, and they always baked some bread and cakes in the wood-fired oven. And the smell and the atmosphere was just amazing, especially winter time. And probably that's how it started.
Well, that's fantastic. So how long have you worked at the Stir Bakery then?
Exactly 2 years. I started 2 years ago.
Are you being headhunted, given your success, or are people offering you jobs?
Yes, I'm well known in the industry, I would say, which is really, really great. But I'm really happy here. It's because the support from the owners is just incredible. And not to mention my team. I have the most amazing team. Mm. And it took quite a long time to find the right people. But now we are just like a family.
Yeah.
So just having fun. And they're all great.
And the baking awards you've got, are they principally for the bread? Or does it cover the other products as well? The cakes, for example, the croissants?
Until now, we had only chance to enter the bread competitions. However, this year going to enter the national cake competition as well, which will be held in Birmingham in a month's time.
I'll look out for the results. That's fantastic. Roughly how much bread do you bake a day? How many loaves?
400 or 500 sourdough a day. But again, it can be more or less, but yeah. Average 400 or 500. We do brioche buns, very, very popular.
Oh. And your brioche buns won an award, didn't they, in 2022?
Yes. Yeah, that's the other one. It's the World Bread Award.
That was the Tiptree World Bread Awards. Yeah.
Correct. It was a category winner in the sweet category.
Yeah. That is an extraordinary number of awards. You must be Very pleased, very satisfied.
Yes, I am, and could be better. So hopefully this year we'll end up with more trophies. So.
Yeah, great, okay. Anyway, many congratulations, Chandler.
Thank you so much.
A truly impressive story. What a nice way to become interested in baking. And I tried one of Stir's new loaves made with ancient grains, including spelt and einkorn, and it is very tasty and hugely different from the mass-produced loaves a lot of us were brought up on and which a lot of people still eat. As Chandor said, some loaves sold by supermarkets have up to 12 ingredients and all you need is flour, salt and water. You have to be suspicious of 12 ingredients.
Well, indeed. And we're off for a two-minute break now, and then we'll be back with Life on Cambridge Market, some ideas for onions from Rosie Sykes, free food in Cambridge, and more up-to-the-minute food and drink news.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello there, Glenn Jones here. I keep you company Sunday mornings from 10.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Glenn.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Glenn.
Hello, lovely to speak to you.
It's a relaxing start to your day with fantastic music and interesting people from across the city in South Cambridgeshire.
The Tudor marketing machine was working overtime here.
If I can do it, anybody can have a go.
Time and time again, we are floored by the generosity of people in Cambridge.
You can catch me Sunday mornings from 10 o'clock or anytime you fancy at cambridge105.co.uk.
CKLG Accountants are a friendly team of accountants and tax advisors with big firm expertise.
I'm Lawrence, Director of CKLG, responsible for business services. Throughout your lifetime, your personal and financial situation will change. Maybe you've just arrived in the UK to work or are looking to invest in property. Perhaps you're making plans for your retirement and are looking to reduce potential inheritance tax liabilities. CKLG Accountants ensure you receive bespoke tax advice tailored to you and your family's needs along the way.
To find out more, call us on Cambridge 810 100 to arrange an initial chat with one of our specialists or visit our website cklg.co.uk.
CKLG Accountants, your partner in business, your partner in life.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to Flavour. Now for this next feature, we head to Cambridge Market to meet Laura.
Hi, I'm Laura and this is the cheese stall and we're opposite Popeye's Chicken and what used to be Gap on the front of the market every Friday and Saturday and extra days at Christmas.
Laura started working 25 years ago with her dad at Cambridge Market on his stall.
Yeah, my dad had the hemp store.
The hemp store, selling lots of hemp products.
Shampoos, handbags, very different to cheese. And I knew nothing about cheese when I started, so it's been a real education for me. I feel like a bit of an expert now.
Laura took over from David Fishman, who himself took over from original cheese stall owner Bob Wesley, who, according to their website, set up the stall in 1970 to sell real cheeses. Cheeses that were in danger of being lost because of the newfound novelty of mass-produced bland cheeses. Here's David.
I always used to buy cheese from Bob, but I didn't know anything about it, and I had the opportunity to join him, and I did, and I've never looked back. Really enjoy it. I'd like to say Bob was a pioneer. He used to work for one of the Stilton makers as a cheesemaker when all you could get was basically Dutch cheese, English cheese, cheddar, and a bit of brie, and the brie is like the brie you get now from very bad places, which has a line of chalk in the middle of it because they've cut it before it's ripe. He introduced me to selling proper artisan cheeses, and I've carried it on.
So, Bob started the cheese stall in 1970, David took over in 1998, and Laura is the new boss of the cheese stall, bringing all of her market experience with her.
I was Saturday girl when I was 15. I've also helped out on the veg stall next door. We used to joke about getting me a pair of roller skates so I could just go up and down and work all stalls. The hours were great, it was my dad, and yeah, met David through doing that. So yeah, it takes all sorts to work down here, basically. I try and be jolly and friendly. And actually, David has come back and helped me out a couple of times at Christmas and stuff. And we've joked, I've never seen him so enthusiastic and helpful. So he's now the enthusiastic sales girl, and I'm gradually turning into the grumpy proprietor.
That's nice that he comes back. So he's still
he's still fully invested in it.
Oh, absolutely. We said it's going to be like Frank Sinatra's final tour. You know, he will keep making an appearance when he runs out of cheese.
Is there any particular cheese that you'd like to champion here today?
Well, actually, I had this conversation with a customer earlier about red cheeses, because we do a lovely cheese called Hereford Red, and it's gorgeous. It's a bit like Leicester, but it's Jersey milk, so it's creamier. And people are very put off by red cheeses, and I understand, because supermarket Leicester has given all red cheeses a bad name. But yeah, I would encourage people to try the lovely farm-made red cheeses. Don't be put off by the red. There's some really good ones.
When I was here last time, the Sage Derby was in short supply, but it was popular and it was really good cheese.
Yeah. I managed to find some of that. We had it again this Christmas and people were so excited to see it back. But yeah, it's getting the amounts right. Is the hard stuff is not so much of a worry, but the soft stuff has more of a shelf life, so that you've got to be careful with. And again, like I said, I like it when it's cold, because when it's cold, I bring in everything I can fit in the van, and then I know I've got plenty. But in the summer, you just want to bring a little bit of everything, try and keep everything cold as possible.
You told me what your favourite cheese was?
Well, the Hereford Red that I was saying about before. The Grand Reserve Comté that we do, I just want to let people know that I test it several times a day because I have to make sure it's in perfect condition when I sell it to you.
Why is that? What happens through the day that makes it change?
You never know. Anything could have happened to it, so I need to keep tasting it to make sure.
Can you go home and still enjoy cheese in your own time?
Oh, absolutely. And my children get a bit sick of it. You know, Mum, can you cook anything that doesn't have cheese in it? My son is very into cooking now, and he wasn't overly impressed that I took over the cheese stall last year until he realised we had the Lancashire Tasty Bomb on tap now. And now he's suddenly really impressed that Mum has the cheese stall. And when David did go over to France, the cheesemakers he bought from would request that he bought those over, which we always think that's a huge compliment from a French cheesemaker. They're very, very good.
I thought the quietest time of year for a cheese stall might be January, February time, straight after Christmas.
Actually, no. I mean, we have a bit of a lull in January. We tend to have a couple of weeks off because we figure everyone's overbought at Christmas. They've all gone on a diet for New Year's, and then by the end of January, they've forgotten about it. But we're pretty steady throughout the cold months. I think cheese is a comfort food. You know, people enjoy having some cheese and red wine at home. I'd say our quiet time is more the summer. We still do business, but it's more tourists that don't have a fridge, so they're buying a little bit of brie to take on a picnic and things like that.
So it's always fun working on the store. You're always learning things. You're always...
Yeah. Recipe recommendations. You know, people say, oh, I'm taking this gorgonzola home and I'm going to put it with these herbs and add it to pasta. And you think, oh, that sounds good. I'll try that when I get home. And lots of cheesy jokes as well. You hear several times a day.
Any particular examples?
So anything with a pun on camembert, a camembert, things like that. Nacho cheese, it's not your cheese. And yeah, like I said, I hear them several times a day. They kind of go in one ear and out the other.
How do you consider your own knowledge of cheese nowadays?
Really good, but totally by accident, just completely fell into it. And but it's an easy thing to get passionate about. There's a lot to know about it. I've gone to dinner parties with a friend before, and I've been at a table with all these academics and professors, and I feel a bit out of my depth because, you know, hello, I'm from the market. But I bring out my cheese board and I start telling them all about the Grand Reserve Comté, and they all think I'm fabulous. So.
Any memorable customers?
Well, you meet some fascinating people here, you know, all sorts of professors and politicians, and you get to... David used to love talking politics with various politicians we had come on here. And then you get, yeah, like you say, as a lovely lady, she used to come every Friday evening and tidy up for me. She never ordered a specific piece of cheese. She'd just see whatever little bit was lying around and then she'd take that home. So, yeah, she was brilliant.
We've got theatres, like, dotted all around us. So do you see actors coming through?
We do, and I very rarely register until afterwards. We had Felicity Kendall, and I had no idea. And another one was, oh, is it Alistair McGowan that does the impressions?
Yeah.
And it was only after he left, and they laughed at me, and I said, well, but he was being himself. He wasn't doing an impression of anybody, so I didn't realise it was him. Oh, we had Debbie Harry on the stall once, years ago. I'd love to have seen that.
What are your bread and butter cheeses? They're perennial sellers.
Definitely Hereford Hop. It tastes a bit like a cheddar, but it's made with Jersey milk. It's covered in toasted hops, and it's our best-selling cheese that you've never heard of. You know, people will come back. I bought a cheese off you 6 months ago. It was really nice. And off of that, I normally guess, was it Hereford Hop? And it was. And then the standards as well, like Stilton. I mean, at Christmas, we go through more Stilton than you could ever imagine. Even the cheddars, I think old cheddar's a bit boring, but a proper good farmhouse cheddar is, yeah, you can't beat it.
So even having a cheddar on the stall is, it's worth its space on the stall?
Absolutely. I mean, we have several sometimes, yeah, several different ones. Oh, we've got one called Montagne de Bethmal. This is a lovely Pyrenees goat cheese, and it's turned out to be one of our best sellers. It's got a lovely texture. It's kind of springy, not too goaty. I'm not always keen on really strong goat's cheese, and yeah, I really enjoy that one.
And also, if it's a natural food and it's small production, there are times of the year when it's better. There's times of the year when the milk's different. In the summer, the milk's going to have more fat in it than in the winter. Doesn't make it better or worse than different. If you buy from a multiple, then their whole remit is to make everything taste the same. So if you buy it in their posh store in Cambridge, you've got to go into their one in Edinburgh, and it's got to taste exactly the same as it does in Yeovil. So it becomes homogenised. It's not individual. So my theory is you can buy a bottle of wine and pay a lot of money from it from a supermarket. It's going to be good. But if you went to a specialist wine merchant, you're getting something that guy has tasted. You're using his palate, and you're getting something for the same price that is going to be different. And it's the same with the cheese. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm sorry if I'm a go on a bit, but I do feel strongly about this.
I knew nothing about cheese when I started working here. I worked for my dad on another stall. David was forever wandering off, and I'd come and unofficially help his customers, so he said, let's make it official. And it's just a lovely atmosphere. I think after working here for so long, I couldn't imagine sitting in an office and, you know, being that restricted. Hard, but good.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Laura.
No worries. It's nice talking to you.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio. Many thanks to Laura of the Cheese Stall, and you can find them every Friday and Saturday on Cambridge Market.
Yes, Cambridge City Council is doing a lot of advertising at the moment of positions on Cambridge Market, you know, stalls that can be booked. So it's interesting to hear a bit about life on the market. Yeah. Fits well. Anyway, on to our second news roundup. The Foraging Chef has announced the dates of his forthcoming wild food tours. You meet in the Panton Arms and then go foraging around the Newnham area between 11 in the morning and 3 p.m. The dates are the 17th of March, the 24th of March, the 14th of April and the 28th of April, and the cost is £50. And Sue, you say it's well worth it.
Well worth it, absolutely so, yeah.
I must go.
You must go, indeed you must. And then coming soon and aiming at a round opening in Easter, the Norstow Taproom and Social. This sounds really good. There'll be a bar, a cafe, a bakery and a gym. It's a big deal, this. It'll be open 7 days a week, and Steak and Honour will be there every day except Monday and Tuesday, serving up burgers and also Dot's Hot Chicken. They will have on-fire barbecue van there too, smoking meats for lunchtime subs and doing cheeseburgers and chilli cheese for the evenings to go with their beer.
Alex from the Bagel Box has bagel making classes. These are on the 31st of March, April 21st, May 26th and June 30th at Market House in the Market Square. There's morning and evening sessions available. The morning session is £90 per person and the evening one is £100 per person. And you can book a session for a party or a work function too. Just contact Alex via his Bagel Box website.
Cambridge Cookery School has a perfect pastry class on the 7th of March and an Indian curries masterclass on the 14th of March.
And coming up at the White Cottage Bakery in Kingston, there's a sourdough workshop. That's on the 8th of March. Hot cross buns on the 27th of March. An introduction to artisan bread making on the 21st of March. And there's the twice yearly baking retreat in Tuscany. The first one of those is from the 4th to the 10th of April. All details for all of these can be found on the White Cottage Bakery website.
Wine, wine, wine.
Time for some wine news. New tasting dates at Amphora have been announced. There's Syrah or Shiraz on February the 28th, Greek wines on the 6th of March, Sherry on the 13th of March, Bordeaux versus Bordeaux blends on the 20th of March, and with age comes a comparison of young and old wines on the 27th of March, and all the tastings cost £38 and begin at 8 p.m.
And there are tastings at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road on February the 29th, Pinot Noir from around the world, 14th of March, Rioja and Ribiera del Duero, 21st of March, Cabernet Sauvignon from around the world, 18th of April, Bordeaux and Southwest France, and on the 16th of May, Tuscany and Central Italy. Tickets are £30 and the tastings run from 7 till 8:30 p.m.
And that's the end of the news roundup. And on to now Rosie Sykes. And Rosie has a new book out, Every Last Bite. It was published on Thursday, so it will be in local bookshops now. And a reminder that you can hear Rosie talking about it in our last podcast. But ever busy, Rosie joins us today with some ideas for cooking onions.
So onions are the base of most things, aren't they? I mean, a lot of things, savoury food is based around onions. And I always feel very sad for people who, for dietary reasons, can't eat onions because they're just there. They're something that make our food sweet and rich without us even realising. So I think we should pay homage to the onion for sure. One of my favourite things to do with onions, well, two things actually. One is if I've got the oven on, again, I often put a tray of unpeeled, about 8 or 10 onions in the oven, unpeeled, and bake them slowly, just like that. They don't need seasoning, they don't need anything really. Leave them to get completely soft. And then you can just pop them out of their coats and you've got basically the same as you would have if you slow cooked onions in a pan. The only difference being you need to chop them up at that stage. But you have this sweet, unctuous wonderfulness that is the base you can use as a base for a soup or a stew, or you could use if you wanted to make a tortilla or a quiche. It's just a really handy way of, again, using your oven when it's on and not having to worry about, you know, if you're cooking onions in a pan on the stove, you have to keep going and stirring and worrying about them, that they're going too brown or they're sticking. And from that, one of my favourite things to make, which is really delicious with roast, is classically served with roast lamb, actually, is called sauce soubise. And it's a French sauce, but it's basically a white sauce with an onion puree through it. And it was named after an 18th century general who was a favourite of Louis the 15th. But that very sweet onion in a sort of creamy bechamel that's got bay and flavoured with bay and maybe a bit of nutmeg is a really delicious. It's almost like bread sauce flavours. So, again, it's really nice with the roast chicken. It's just a lovely thing, which I would highly recommend. Another thing I love doing is stuffing an onion. So in that case, what I would do is peel them, but keep their base, not keep the really hairy base, but keep a bit of base on them so they really stay together. And then I put them in a tray, nice and closely packed, with some olive oil or oil or butter, salt and pepper, and some water just to cover the bottom, maybe a tiny bit of vinegar. And sometimes if I've got it knocking around, I put a little bit of apple juice or something slightly sweet in there. Then I cover it with foil and cook them quite slowly until they're very soft. Let them get cool. And then what you can do is sort of pull out the middles of them and chop those up and mix them with breadcrumbs, sausage meat, all sorts of things. And then put them back in, lots of flavorings. I always use a lot of thyme and sage. But, you know, you could go really spicy. You can go always with that. Put the stuffing back in that space that you've removed from the middle of each one. And then I often put a few more breadcrumbs on top and dot with some butter or drizzle with oil. Put back in the oven with no cover on. and then the rest of any liquid mostly will evaporate, and your filling will cook. Probably if you're using sausage meat or mince or something, you're going to need half an hour or so. But any, you know, extra liquor in the bottom makes a nice sauce. But that's a really lovely meal, I think. It takes some time in the oven, but again, it's a walk away job. You don't have to think about it.
Sounds delicious. That was Rosie Sykes there with ideas for onions, and we hope to have Rosie back next time with some ideas for cooking leeks.
There's the familiar music signalling time for news from social media.
Meadows have been on to say that Farage's Kitchen Supper Club is going to be at Meadows on the 8th of March in the evening, and that's for authentic Syrian cooking. It runs from 7 till 9 p.m. and there's very limited spaces. Mercado Central has a new menu starting next week, including guinea fowl with pomegranate and hazelnuts, which sounds extraordinarily interesting. And from next week, they're open from Wednesdays till Saturdays for set lunch, £24 for two courses and £29 for three, which is pretty reasonable, I think. Hidden by Poudini, they have a supper club on the 1st of March. Bookings are being taken now. And the Lab in Regent Street has a new series of cocktail-making workshops for which beginners are particularly welcome. And tickets or bookings are available shortly. Just watch their Instagram posts for more information about that. Well, we've got a couple of minutes spare today, which is quite unusual. And we have a couple of newspapers with us as well, the food sections from The Guardian and from the Financial Times. Anything in there that strikes you as interesting,
well,
Sue?
I was looking at this aubergine cuckoo, a classic retested, which, I mean, OK, maybe a classic, but I haven't heard of it.
Cuckoo.
Cuckoo, K-U-K-U.
I see, it's not a sort of posh pronunciation of couscous.
No. It says it's similar to frittata, but wetter in texture, and it's Iranian, with barberries in it, but you could use cranberries or currants soaked in lemon juice. And it sounds absolutely
actually,
gorgeous.
I've got some barberries. They're not that difficult to get a hold of.
And they
do taste sort of slightly lemony currants, that's true.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I fancy that, and I love aubergines. I think, because I love frittata, this sounds really, really interesting.
Is that whose recipe is that? Is that an Ottolenghi one?
Yes, indeed it is.
Right.
Yep, of course it's Ottolenghi. I love Ottolenghi.
Anything else? Grab your eyes.
Ooh, they've just some very nice recipes, some leek recipe there. And, Ravinder Bagal has got some very interesting different ways of cooking with mince. Chicken mince and normal mincey mince. And, some very interesting ones there. Crisp pork mince, rice paper rolls. I've got some rice papers. So need to go get the pork mince.
Ravinder Bagal is also, strangely enough, in the Financial Times with fish and fennel meatball spaghetti. Yes,
interesting.
I don't think it's got any meat in it. I don't really know why it's called meatball. It's called
fishball.
What it should be. What it should be called.
Mm.
I don't know if you noticed, but last weekend in the Financial Times food section, Tim Haywood reviewed a restaurant in Nottingham, and the day after in the Observer, Jay Rayner reviewed the same restaurant.
Which is suspicious.
It does happen, but you do wonder about it. But then I think it was Tim who explained what happened. They were both in Nottingham to do a recording of The Kitchen Cabinet, and they thought, while we're here, let's get a restaurant review done. And they both, by chance, went to the same restaurant. And Jay Rayner got there first, and I think it was already eating when Tim wandered in. And Tim said, well, if you're here first, then I'll find somewhere else. And Jay Rayner said that he thought there was very little crossover in readership between the Financial Times and the Observer, so he thought it wouldn't matter.
It was allowed.
If they both, but it has happened before, actually. Anyway, I have both of these reviews, and I'm going to read them and just to compare. But I've been too busy coughing this week
to settle down and read
anything. But I remember a while ago, Grace Dent reviewed something, and Tim Haywood reviewed the same place. It was interesting. Tim's was much more praising.
Oh, fair enough.
There's Green Onions taking us into our jobs section, and Burwash Larder in Barton is looking for people to work for 2 to 3 weekdays a week, plus 3 weekend shifts a month. Just send your CV to info@burwashlarder.com.
Restaurant 22 has a front of house position. For information, email alex@restaurant22.co.uk.
And a quick roundup of other jobs now. For details, contact them via their websites or pop in at a quiet time for a chat. Firstly, Pint Shop has vacancies for chefs at all levels, including senior sous chef, for between £38,000 and £48,000 a year.
Parker's Tavern at the University Arms Hotel is looking for an executive chef.
There are vacancies for a pizza chef at Aromi and at Maurizio. Aromi also has a vacancy for a pasta chef, and a grill chef is wanted at Byron's.
Sous chefs are required at Coluccio's and the Waterman. A junior sous chef is sought by Pembroke College.
And finally, there are vacancies for chefs de partie at the Varsity Hotel, Hotel du Van, Provenance Kitchen and Midsummer House. All of which brings us to the end of today's programme. We're here on alternate Saturdays, 12 noon, repeated Mondays at 6, Thursdays at 2. Coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio is Too Good To Be Forgotten, followed by Home at 4pm.
But that's all from us today. Very many thanks for listening. We'll be back on the 9th of March. So until then, goodbye.